Welcome to Wham Bam Tram, Hong Kong's first urban transit radio show. And today we're talking ride sharing with Uber. I'm James Ockenden. I'm with co-host Alok Jain, and we'll be chatting with Uber's head of regulatory affairs, Richard Wilder, in just a moment. First, let's meet Martin Turner, chairman of the Hong Kong Cycling Alliance, for a quick look at the news. Okay, I'm sure you've seen this, Martin. News from the US, bike-to-vehicle technology. Now, this is car makers and bike makers getting together to make some tech which they say will make biking safer. Is this a good idea? Are we going to get cyclists who don't have this technology on their bike blamed for not having it if they get run down?
Well, yes, we might. And the whole idea that we have to make bikes in the image of cars is a problem at all levels of planning. Bikes are not complex, high-tech, motorized, normally, machines, and that's not how they work. That's not how people use them. So anything that maps bikes onto the way cars have been forced to work to avoid their drivers going around killing people is a problem.
Okay, Richard, well, we'll start off talking about regulation, because obviously we've been through a lot of ups and downs with regulation of ride hailing in Hong Kong. And if I talk to lawmakers on either side of the aisle, they both wanted regulation for Uber. I think everyone admits that, you know, the head in the sand approach isn't really working.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I think there needs to be some sort of movement. I think you've hit the nail on the head. There is wide-based support for some sort of change. What that looks like specifically is something we need to dial into. And I think we certainly know from an Uber perspective that we're going to need to find a way to compromise locally. And we've been really proactive in getting that message to the government that we want to find opportunities to compromise and make sure that we can find a win-win solution for everyone across the industry. Obviously, we've also seen the withdrawal of the Franchise Taxi Services Bill, which I think is a really positive development for Hong Kong. I think it's going to allow room and space for the government to rethink their approach and come up with a few new solutions as to how they can help modernise the taxi industry.
I think the biggest sticking point talking to Frankie Yek, for example, who's the Transport Panel Chairman, is the taxi trade, obviously. So, I mean, what's your solution there?
I mean, it's a really good question. I think the taxi trade as a whole is so big, and there's such a fragmented set of interests there. So, for example, there are individual drivers, there's the efficiency of the network, there's consumer value and the consumer proposition. I think about improving taxi service quality, and one of the things that I think is a really simple and it sounds so incredibly simplistic, but it's an incredibly valuable tool, is the rating and feedback system that we have on the Uber app. It has a dramatic impact not just on exactly what the ratings look like at the end of the day, but on behavior, both from a driver side and from a consumer side. I mean, when we introduced rider deactivations in Australia, we saw a marked increase in consumer behavior. There are great outcomes there. Let me give you one more example. I don't want to talk forever, but I'll give you one more example that I think is really valuable, is one that we looked at in the Australian context years ago, which was compensation and hardship funds that existed for taxi medallion owners. I'll be completely honest with you. I work for Uber. I love Uber. I take Ubers all over the place. But at the same time, I take lots of street hail taxis as well, because oftentimes it's the most convenient way to get around. I take the MTR. I walk. There are always different modes of transportation out there. And street hail in a dense city like Hong Kong is always going to be a valuable part of the transport mix.
Hong Kong is, of course, a very unique kind of a city. We have a lot of people using public transport, highest in the world.
Yeah.
How do you define Uber's relationship with public transport?
It is literally at the top of my mind all the time. I think this is a really one of the things I was most proud of last year, was being able to launch Uber Transit. It's one of 15 cities in the world where we've been able to get that over the line globally, which essentially integrates public transportation into the Uber app. What comes next is the most interesting part for me, which is ticketing integration, how you can automate it and actually get, and we're doing this in some markets, cities like Denver. I know we're thinking about it in other cities around the world as well. The next step after that, which is the part that excites me the most, is first last mile integration. How you can start in one place and have this completely connected multimodal journey all planned out from inside an app. How you can start with a car ride, getting you to a train station, taking you from one place to another in the train, getting out on the other side and getting maybe a shared bike the rest of the way, how that works. Like, all integrated and connected in an app, all paid for and all waiting for you.
How important is Uber Eats for you in context of mobility? How does that fit into the mobility space?
The food delivery business has just fundamentally changed the way people think about consumption and think about, eating and dining. The growth during the pandemic's been spectacular. But I think what we're really focused on now is not just how we can, you know, make sure we continue to deliver really viable products on that front, but how we can think about new vertical lines, how we can think about capitalizing on the market that exists at the moment and finding new efficiencies for different parts of the market. So for delivery, for that side of the business, that last mile rush delivery mile, I think that restaurants often need to have a more fulsome understanding of what their model looks like from an economic perspective and how that works and integrates with new modes of delivery and things like that.
Given it's growing so much, I mean, I'd say one in three people in the lifts in our building now is one of the food delivery companies. From a sustainable transport perspective, you know, it's almost like a whole new thing which has just grown up overnight. And where is the impetus to keep that clean or to clean that up coming from? Because it's certainly not from the government. Is Uber itself looking at anything like cargo bike delivery or sort of e-scooter for these for this new logistics business?
It's a critical piece of thought leadership that we think we need to take as a business to make sure that that entire industry is sustainably growing as well as just growing. I'll be honest with you, a large number of the kind of delivery partners that we have here in Hong Kong who are delivering food are doing so walking. I don't know what the different platforms breakdowns look like, but the majority of our people are actually just walking around.
Are those walkers? Because I know another firm is using, has a lot of walkers, but in fact those walkers are using bicycles. Because to save themselves time, but you know the platform doesn't know what they're doing.
Well, we do to a degree as well. You can kind of map these things out, and we certainly have a lot of data to help us kind of solve some of those challenges. And we're pretty strict about it. We try to make sure we manage for that really carefully. We have tech involved that can kind of map out whether or not someone's. I mean, you can kind of roughly figure out someone's speed, and you can get a sense as to how fast they're moving and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and we can send out little reminders to people saying, "Hey, you told us you're walking around. You're actually. It seems like you're going a little bit fast to be walking."
Right.
And you can get a signal as to whether or not they're doing that a few times and what that looks like, and make sure people are doing the right thing. Certainly, I'm trying to think about. Deliveries that I get done where I live, and I can't help but think that it would be much more acrimonious to do that on a bicycle than it would be to walk most of the time.
Acrimonious how? Like?
Oh, like harder to, like, for example, take a bike somewhere than it would be to quickly walk somewhere. By the time you walk, find a place to park, all those bits and pieces, it might actually be easier to quickly walk back and forth somewhere. And that's the beauty of kind of a very... a flat system where there are a whole lot of people in a whole lot of different areas getting food. And we've got kind of price signals in the app that make it a little bit more costly to get food from further away, which is really good, not only for making sure a lot of these trips are shorter because it's a clear price signal, there's economic value there, but the other side of it, which is it's great for local restaurants who otherwise might be competing with, you know, a big restaurant on the other side of town. It's fantastic to be able to find ways to support them.
Some of the recent criticisms of Uber or Lyft or ride-hailing services in cities like New York is that it is actually adding to the traffic. Mm. It is making congestion worse. Mm. Do you think that is really true, or is it this Uber model is not really going to replace private cars but add to those problems, urban problems in the city?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've heard this criticism a lot, and I fundamentally don't agree with it. It's the vision that we look at when we think about the future of cities and the future of transport in these cities, when I think about it, I look at some of the work that the OECD has done and the International Transport Forum has done on what the future of a city that is shared electric and automated, has shared electric and automated vehicles. They're kind of these three pillars that we think about when we think about the future of transportation. Absolutely the direction we need to be heading in. The second we start thinking that the best way to do things is just tell people not to drive and not to do things, I mean, you've got to be able to embrace customer choice and find creative ways to move forward at the same time.
Data sharing.
Yes.
Very hot topic.
Yes.
You know, today, if I want to know what has been the bus patronage or train ridership, I can just go to transport department website, open it up, and I can find it.
So important.
Where is Uber data?
It's a really good question. I think we do a lot of it internally. We work with our data, and we're a very data-driven company. It's something that we use to think heavily about new product investment and innovation. from a public perspective, it's equally important. And finding ways to help public institutions manage data and get a better picture of what's going on in the city is critical to us. One of the things that we do in some markets is we introduce a product called Uber Movement, which maps out, time taken and distance traveled. And it's designed to help transport officials and urban planners get a better understanding of how people are moving around the city, not at an aggregate level over 6 months, but really narrowing that data down and figuring out how people are moving in real time and not actually watching people move around and things like that, but understanding at a much more aggregate and accurate level how people are moving around cities. And we think that's really, really helpful to support governments in their planning. It's a product, honestly, that I am super keen to think about rolling out in Hong Kong. I would love to find a way forward on that here. And I hope you will hear more from me about that this year. I'm hopeful, but we've got a fair bit of work to go before we get there. But I would love to find a way to show a little bit more, both for the government and the public, about how the city moves.
So transport is, of course, a utility. Mm-hmm. And Uber, by nature of being a business, it is opportunistic. Mm. I mean, you exited China, you exited Singapore, and that, of course, so people who were using Uber, and suddenly if you exit a market, it creates a vacuum, it creates a whole different proposition for a lot of people. Mm. What do you see that happening in Hong Kong? If, let's say, if the competition gets hot, if there are a lot of Chinese operators come into the play, and if going gets rough, would you just exit?
Look, honestly, we are deeply committed to the marketplace. And that's like, I do get asked that question occasionally. And certainly from our perspective, I can't stress enough how committed we are to Hong Kong. The ability to get an Uber, both from a professional level and the work that we're doing here in Hong Kong, it's a really dynamic and vibrant business. And we think it's really important. From a personal perspective, as someone who lives here, moving around the city, it's incredibly important. There would be missing transport links without Uber that would be incredibly difficult to solve. I mean, I just think about like trying to get out to a beach on a weekend or something like that. And that's a really difficult proposition without like a whole lot of structures in place to fix for that. We are deeply committed to the market, which is why we're so eager to kind of funnel new investment into the market, why we're able to launch products like Uber Transit last year, why we're able to double down on Eats leadership. We've got a new general manager of our Uber Eats business here, who's just come over from Australia. We're deeply committed to the market in so many different ways. I think we've got a long and sustainable future here, which we're really excited about. And I certainly don't imagine a scenario where we're going to be leaving Hong Kong as hanging. We want to find a way to continue to serve Hong Kongers for a long time.
One of the issues, obviously, there's a legal issue with the cars that you take if you hail an Uber. 99% of them don't have this hire car license. So they are essentially operating illegally, which is unusual for a big corporation to be sort of so brazenly operating in this way in a major city. I mean, does this keep you awake at night?
Yeah, look, first of all, I wouldn't use those terms. I think what I'd say is that it's still a very grey and unregulated area of the law in Hong Kong. The point-to-point transport regulations, I actually saw this the other day. One of the decisions governing the hire car permit regime was last signed off on, last gazetted in April 1981. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty old piece of old piece of paper. Now that's governing a modern transportation industry to a degree. These reforms were the industry regulations as they exist at the moment were decided and developed before the internet, before smartphones, before any form of modern technology that governs and manages the industry as we see it at the moment. So it's certainly just in this grey and unregulated space at the moment that we're hoping we can get a bit more clarity on. We've got a lot of, and again, without wanting to get into too much detail, we've got a lot of exciting ways we think we can solve for some of these challenges and where we want to work with government to find a pathway forward. Certainly, we're constantly trying to find ways to make sure all our drivers are working in a way that is fulsomely accredited, and part of the system that exists. But we're going to need to see a little bit of movement from the government side as well, which is why we're working so hard to kind of partner with them and find solutions going forward.
Will Uber ever make money?
Absolutely.
I know this question has been asked thousands of times, but I would ask it anyway.
Absolutely. Look, as we've spoken about so many times, like we've always been really focused on investment. And in addition to kind of earning money, being able to invest at the same time in new offerings and doubling down in places that are more challenging.
Okay. Thank you very much, Richard.
No, thank you for having me. This has been a delight.
Next week, we're back on our feet talking walking, the 3D pedestrian network, and the problems of public transport interchange design.
And you can see there's a portal in the railing. The escape from the hell of the road is when you step on the bus.
Right now, it's time for our drama, Alphard Wars. This story is purely fictional. Certain long-standing institutions, agencies, and public offices are mentioned, but the characters involved are wholly imaginary. Any similarity with any characters living or dead is purely a coincidence.
It's Sunshine Man with the morning box.
It's open.
Good morning, Chief Executive. First up, the post-it notes from this week, madam.
Post-it, Sunshine?
From the change-making event.
Change-making?
The new walkability consultation, madam.
Listen, Sunshine, I'm quite busy. You'll have to refresh my memory.
It's our new dialogue approach, madam. Instead of collecting views from everyone, we pay consultants $50 million to get a small cross-section of people in a room and write their ideas on post-it notes. And then they stick them on the wall.
Did we get some good ideas?
No, madam. They're all awful.
Okay, bin. Listen, Sunshine. Police Chief Wu is retiring tomorrow, and I need to announce his successor. It's down to CSP Fader and CSP Yu, and you to write a speech for both. Call the office of the thesaurus. It needs to be a good one.
Okay, ma'am. Vader's the tough-talking, protest-fighting harbour hero, and Yu is the son of Guangzhou governor and the president's great-grandnephew. I think we all know how that's going to go.
Don't take that tone with me, Sunshine. We'll choose on merit. I'll consult the ISCO later. Rumour has it Fader's going off the rails a bit lately, talking about a war on cars.
Oh dear, man, that's not going to go down well with the election committee now, is it?
Across town, CSP Vader has survived her first night in the wild and is pushing Lim's fully laden trolley to the cardboard truck to earn a few extra dollars. Lady Lim, my pleasure to see you this fine morning.
I suppose I see you every day.
You are my best first customer every day, Lady Lim. Let's weigh this up then.
Let me ask you something. You're a Hindu, right?
I'm Sikh, lady. Look at the turban.
Oh. Well, did you ever hear of reincarnation while still alive?
That is a very interesting question, Lady Lim. $6 for the lot.
$6? I've got a whole Zara store refit in there.
Okay. Thursday price, I give you $7. Most of the cardboard ruined today. Fibers shot after their accident on Bonham Road. Cardboard very sensitive to baryon particles, you know.
Baryons? Bonham Road? What do you know about that?
The nuclear accident. Everyone is talking about it. Of course, nobody asked me because I'm just a recycling man. But I read books. I've got my theories.
We should really have a chat. When's your shift over?
4 a.m. Come back and we'll talk.
Shirley for you, madam.
Shirley? Do I know a Shirley?
Your horse trainer, madam. Somebody else's problem?
Oh, horse. Right. Okay. Does she come here often?
Come to think of it, only when we run illegal betting operations. We're not making another move against a jockey club, are we, madam?
Oh, no. Nothing like that. Bring her through.
There you go, Shirley.
I need to speak to you in private, madam. It's about someone else's problem.
Do you need me, madam?
No. Let's keep this one off the record. So what's the story, Shirley?
Ma'am. How to put this? There's someone who came to see me who says she's you.
Say again?
She says she's you. An accident with a Byron truck. It's obviously crazy, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
The thing is, I said I would help her and come and talk to you, so...
You know there's plenty of horse trainers in Hong Kong, young lady.
You are someone different. Vader would never threaten me like that.
Frank! Frank! Meet Hangover!
I'm practically family. I was there at the birth of all your horses. I nursed my favorite plastic handcuffs for 4 days straight without sleeping.
Psh! What's going on? How did you find out?
The horse found out. They have a remarkable sense of smell, you know.
I thought that was dogs.
Whatever's happened is the strangest thing. We need to sort it out. Vida is in big trouble. She can't survive as an old lady.
You think I can? You think it's easy being in this city collecting cardboard on a trolley? Nobody looks twice at me. Right now, I come in the door, 3 people salute.
It's not right, madam. Plus, number one has a message for you.
Number one? A message?
Yes. He says he's figured something out.
Well, it won't hurt to meet this Veda.
Thank you. I'll set something up. The swimming shed. She says it's the only place not bugged.
The swimming shed! Did I tell you my husband swam there every day, right until his 103rd birthday? We scattered his ashes there.
I see.
Well, that coastline is now reclaimed, of course. His ashes are part of the foundation of the seaplane terminal Don Don Donkey now. You know, when I was a little girl, it took a week for my grandfather's ashes to drift across the harbour. Now it just takes an hour or so.
Ma'am, can we...
Oh, for heaven's sake. You young people are so impatient all the time. Yes, okay. I will see you there tomorrow and ask Veda which drawer her bathing suit's at. I can't find one anywhere.
Will do. What is your name?